Hello, and welcome to another Untitled Project on the Cause Crosscast Network. My name is Saif Fakadu, and I am a manager here at causecross.com. And joining me on the other line is Jersey's prodigal son, Sean Keeley. Sean, what's good, dude? Thanks for coming on, man.
Happy to be here in Chicago, but always repping Jersey.
All right, I know. City of Broad Shoulders, right? Is that Chicago's nickname? Or I know the Windy City, obviously, but I thought that was another one.
Chicago. You ask somebody what to call Chicago, and they'll give you 27 different nicknames. They're so excited. So, sure, that's in there as well.
Well, one thing I was really excited about this episode, our last one with Caroline, she has such a great and full background of like moving all around the world, actually. And you know, you've been all over the country, so we'd love to get know about Seattle, obviously Syracuse, and your new city, Chicago. But one thing we always like to do, Sean, just always joke around and talk about like moving conversations off of DMs. And like I said, I've talked to you for since I've been co-managing the site, and you've always just been humorous and like insightful. And I think this podcast is gonna live up to everything I already had in my head about you.
No pressure.
No, I'm sure. You were mentioning a little bit of yourself. You're like meeting internet friends when we were off air. I don't know. How's that experience for yourself? I mean,
yeah, it's always kind of funny. Like, but when you talk to somebody online for years, I mean, there's people that I know because of Twitter and because of Syracuse that I know them as an online entity for, going on a decade. And I may not have ever met them in person. And it's really weird when you finally do, because there's that – it's like there's a stranger in front of me, and yet we know each other, but like we don't know each other. And you're not quite exactly how I pictured you based on whatever photos I've seen of you online. And so it's always kind of like this weird dance that you have to do when you meet internet friends in the real world. But it's good to do every once in a while, because I think it reminds you like, all right, this is an actual human being and not some bot that I'm just chatting with every day.
No, exactly. It's a literal, like a deja vu or like a memory like come to life. I don't know. I didn't know exactly what you're talking about. Part of this show is just getting to know you a little bit more. So we'd love to get to start, writing the origin story of our guest. And I know you're from Jersey, but, where were you born and, grade school? And, then we'll move on to high school.
Goodness, this really is an origin story.
Oh, absolutely. We get right into it, Sean. This is, 60 minutes pretty much.
All right, let's dig in. Grew up in Old Bridge, New Jersey, the pride of Middlesex County. The seventh largest township in the state of New Jersey. Literally, like everybody always says, North Jersey versus South Jersey and Central Jersey doesn't exist, but that's nonsense, because Old Bridge is literally Central New Jersey. And I will swear to that, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise. suburban, the ultimate suburb, basically, where I grew up. And I always like to say that Old Bridge is about a 15 to 20 minute car ride to New Brunswick. And, Rutgers is there. I'm a huge college football fan growing up. I was a Notre Dame fan, but we can get into that. it's just so weird in retrospect that it never occurred to me as a kid to ever actually go to a Rutgers football game.
Mm.
20 minutes is nothing. Like, imagine you grow up 20 minutes from Ohio State, you're a diehard. You grow up 20 minutes away from Alabama, you're tied for life. But it was just like that. Rutgers in the 80s and 90s was just, it was a thing that was there, but you just never even considered it. I always like to poke some fun at Rutgers for that, because I have to. And then it's just weird. It's so weird to me now when I go back to Jersey and I see so many Rutgers bumper stickers and T-shirts and decals and store windows. And it's so jarring that that people like actually are into Rutgers now. So good for them on that front. But
that's understandable. You're literally a suburb of New York, the 80s Big East basketball. You're so close to the city, and then Rutgers has kind of a moorbound program. I can totally relate and understand that.
Yeah, I mean it's wild. Like sometimes you know, I feel like there were times in the 2010s when it felt like I was living in this bizarro universe where Rutgers is like on national TV and ranked, and Syracuse is like scraping by at 2-10, and it's like nothing makes sense anymore. The world is out of it. So I'm glad Rutgers went to the Big Ten, so now that they can be terrible again and I can feel more safe.
So, grade school, right in Old Bridge Township, or did you move from where you were born?
No, it's Old Bridge the whole way through. So, James A. McDivitt Elementary School and Carl Sandburg Middle School, and just worked my way up. And we had this weird thing in Old Bridge where we had two high schools, Madison Central and Cedar Ridge. And then my junior year, they combined the high schools. And it was ridiculous because there was this uproar where we didn't want to, you know, I was at Cedar Ridge and we didn't like those snobby kids from Madison Central. And they didn't like us because we were like the dirtbags or something. And it's sort of like West Side Story thing going on in Old Bridge where I think students from that school came over and like protested that they didn't want to join up with us and like all this thing. And so junior year rolls around. It's Old Bridge High School now. And within like 3 days, everybody was like, this is the most amazing thing in the world, because if you're a guy, you have an entirely new field of girls to meet and vice versa. And like all these cool people that and it was just like the dumbest Grease West Side Story battle.
Young Sean was a little league, or did you play? Were you a cross country guy, or like football, or what did you play when you were a kid?
Oh, I was baseball and soccer were my two things. I played like nonstop both of those things. Soccer, you know, I don't know. I guess you don't call it little league. I forget what you call it. Youth soccer, and then did a little bit of travel soccer, and then you know, played little league. Loved that was my favorite thing growing up. And then like, I always saw myself as this like super athlete when I was a kid, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And then I remember when middle school hit and all of a sudden, like I didn't make the soccer team and I was like the last guy on the basketball team, and I don't think we had a baseball team. And I was like, oh, I may not go pro. this may not work out for me. So yeah, I went through kind of like this weird, like for the first couple years of high school where I kind of like shunned sports, and didn't want to do, I gave like, track and field a shot. That didn't really stick. And then, so then when they combined the high schools, they brought in a bunch of new sports that we didn't have. And one of them was lacrosse.
Oh.
And I didn't know anything about it. It was just one of those things where it was like, well, that seems interesting. So why not? So I remember we had, I think it was something like 42 kids tried out for the first team. There wasn't even really tryouts. It was like if you showed up, you were in.
Here's a jersey.
Yeah, yeah. And like this was varsity and JV. So we had like 42 kids. 41 of us had never played before in our lives. And so, yeah, we literally had to learn like how to cradle the ball. And like how to pass and how not to look like a moron, like running with, you know, and the ball falls out every 5 seconds. And it was like this Bad News Bears thing where we didn't even have lacrosse jerseys. We wore football jerseys. Mm. So some of the guys who were actually on the football team had jerseys with their names on the back of them. And then the rest of us just had like blank football jerseys. And the things you don't know until you know. Like, you know, now I know that, yes, in college and pros, lacrosse defenders are, you know, maybe a little bit bigger, or, you know, they're a bit, you know, they're certainly not as usually as lean or fast as the other players. But like when we were playing, we had offensive linemen were our defenders. And so that was like all I knew. Like everything I knew about lacrosse was what was happening with us. So we had like three offensive linemen were our defenders. And so I just assumed like that's what you do. Like that's how lacrosse is played. And so you would just have these three monsters back there knocking people out. And that was like the only reason we were semi-competitive, is because we were just like knocking like private school kids over.
Just a goon game. Squad?
Yeah, seriously, it was a serious goon squad. But I was on the other side. I was on the attack. The joke was that our midfielders would just go nuts trying to get the ball across the field and do all these great things. And then I would run across the goal. They would dump it off to me and I'd score. And that would be, yeah, so that was
kind of. Sean, you're too humble. We got to know about these baller years. So were you a starter, I guess, I'm assuming here?
I was a starter. So that first team, I believe we had one senior. I think it was all juniors, sophomores, freshmen. So
what year were you? Pardon me. What year did it come in when you were in high school?
This was 95.
Or I mean like your school year, your junior, sophomore?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, junior year.
Oh, okay, right on.
Yeah, yeah. So junior year.
So literally never picked up a stick until 16, 15, right around that?
Yeah, right around there. I think they had this like clinic where right when they had announced that we were going to have a lacrosse team, and they're like, hey, come out to the clinic if you think you're interested. And it was literally like, all right, this is how you scoop a ball. This is how you cradle, like all that stuff. And, you know, we had to learn from there. And then I think the second time I ever picked up a lacrosse stick was our first practice.
Wow. That's awesome. 0 to 100. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. So my distinct honor is that I got to score the first goal in Old Bridge lacrosse history.
Oh my God, that's for the books. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. That ball is in a trophy case somewhere. The part that I often leave out of that story is we lost that game 18-2.
Hey, you scored half your team's points.
I know.
Look at that, you know, I mean.
That's right. But that was kind of our thing that season was, I remember we would just get killed because we're playing like Dumbarton and like all these, like St. Joe's, like all these teams that are like top ranked in the state, and they're on our schedule. So they're just like beating up on us like 20-3 and 17-1 and stuff like that. And I'll never forget that after most of our games, what our coach would tell us was the referees would always come over to him and say how great we were, because basically saying like, you guys are getting killed out there, but you're not like being jerks. So that was like, that was the other thing I learned about lacrosse early. Like not being a jerk is apparently like, wow, good for those guys.
It's good sportsmanship to not like take out your frustration out on these kids. So how did that whole inaugural season go? What was your, when did you win your first game?
I did not mean to set this up this way, but I'm pretty sure that our first win was over Rutgers Prep.
No, right on.
And if I remember correctly, there was a parent who got kicked out of the stands for complaining about us because we were hitting too hard. We were like hurting their players because our defenders were hitting them so much. but that was like our secret weapon. Like whenever we played a team that wasn't that good, like, well, we can just like kind of grind them up and beat them up and then maybe score a couple goals. And I think we won something like 7-5 or something like that. And I think on the year, I want to say we were like 2-14. But you know, for a team of players who had never played before and, you know, playing against some of the best teams in the state, like I'll take that. I'll take two wins.
The best part about just being a team, like the first season, you're just literally, as you said, setting records for everywhere. So it would be kind of interesting how long your season scoring, you know, points record lasted at Old Bridge. So why did you know you wanted to go to Syracuse, or like right around that time, did lacrosse like start make you think about Syracuse at all?
I don't even know why I thought of Syracuse. I applied to a bunch. So growing up, I was a big Notre Dame fan because my dad was a big Notre Dame fan.
Mm.
And so I had this idea in my head of going to Notre Dame, but and then I ended up applying there. But I remember going to one of those sessions where like somebody from the university comes and like tells you about the process and what they expect and all that stuff. And I thought the guy was so like snotty. And I was just kind of like, yeah, screw those guys. I don't want to be a part of that. And so what it actually ended up, I got into Maryland, Penn State, and Syracuse. And that was kind of my final three. And I went to visit Maryland, and I didn't really, like there was nothing wrong with it. I just didn't, like, vibe with it. And then I went to Penn State, and I thought, and that was a serious contender. And then I visited Syracuse, and it was the weekend after the 96 Final Four with the John Wallace run where they went to the championship.
Of course. I got Syracuse shorts after that year.
Oh, yeah, those are some good shorts. Those
back
good
in the uniform. Day, those were great shorts. Those were like the great replicas back in the day. Oh, sorry to interrupt.
So I took the campus tour, and it was, you know, it was still like the summer, so it wasn't like crazy there, but there was this, people were still excited and talking about that, and I don't know, I got a really good vibe walking around the campus and, you know, walking through the Carrier Dome, and I thought it was a good school, so just double checked to make sure my dad could pay for it, or, you know, what we could do, and he was cool with it, and so that was that. And the really crazy part is that when I was really young, I was a Georgetown basketball fan. So I was really like committing some sacrilege, but I had kind of, that was a phase, we'll call it. instead of doing hard drugs, that was kind of like my bad phase. But I wouldn't say it was like a thing where I was destined from childhood to go to Syracuse. It just kind of worked out that way.
Oh, no, I just, doing research for this pod, I read your great Troy Nuez article about how lacrosse saved your life. I don't want to bring up such a, I guess, emotional post that you had, but it was a great post, and I didn't know, like, you know, if your love for lacrosse, like, kind of led to Syracuse. But how was that first year at Syracuse?
It was great. I loved it. I was actually just talking... You know, there was that thing that just came out about at Syracuse about that Theta Tau fraternity and that like crappy video that they made and all that, like the racist stuff. And that kind of prompted me to tell a story on Twitter about how awesome my freshman year was, because I was in a dorm where like my whole floor was just like people from all over the country, all over the world. It was like, you know, just people I'd never, the type of people I'd never interacted with before. And we all became really good friends. And, you know, even when it was 10 inches of snow outside all weekend, like we were having great times partying and, you know, just, I think freshman year was probably my favorite year just because there was like so many cool people to hang out with. And, you know, it was still really exciting to go to a football game, go to a basketball game, and you can see Jim Boeheim over there. And yeah, I was a huge lacrosse fan. And the first lacrosse game I ever saw at Syracuse was the number one Virginian versus number two Syracuse when it was like 22-21.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And that's, I learned a valuable lesson about lacrosse that day, which was I went there with three other people. This other guy who played lacrosse and two friends of ours who had never played, never didn't know anything about lacrosse whatsoever. And I'm sitting there watching this and I'm like, this is the greatest lacrosse game I've ever seen in my life. This is amazing. And our two friends who knew nothing about lacrosse were so bored they left at halftime. Uh-huh. I couldn't even like get mad at him because it's like, yeah, I guess if you don't care, like, you don't care. And, but it was just so funny that, you know, I'm just like amazed by the skill, especially again, like growing up, you know, the lacrosse that I grew up with, it was all just like a bunch of guys running around chasing ground balls. And, you know, here are these guys and it's like poetry, like passing to each other and doing all this stuff. And it was amazing. So I got spoiled real quick on that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, was that the Donovan years? Were you around there for Syracuse for football? Or I was going to say those were some great runs. Jimmy, did you meet Jimmy when you were an undergrad? I know you have a great Twitter jokes with him on Twitter, but
I wouldn't say I met him. I had a friend come up for a game where we ended up storming the court afterwards, and he ended up like messing up Boeheim's hair. Like we're on the court and there's like Jim Boeheim right there, and he just like leans over and like rubs his head, like good job.
Like they do the Jimmy Johnson, like the Cowboy. I remember those.
Yeah, yeah, totally did that.
So what was the reaction, or was there?
I remember him smiling. So he wasn't gonna. He didn't want to kill anybody. I think he was just happy that they won. But that was like the joke. After a while, is my friend. You know, he comes up to Syracuse, and we go to a basketball game, and we storm the court, and he's like, like rubbing Jim Boeheim's head. He's like, you know, I could never live up to that again. But yeah, you know, that was McNabb's sophomore, junior, senior year was when I was there.
Mm.
And that was like some great games. I was there for the Tennessee team that won the national championship. They played Syracuse in the first game, and that was a great game. And then they went out to Michigan and beat Michigan in the Big House, and they were ranked most of the time. And then the place was packed, you know. That's, you know, whenever people tell me now that, you know, you can never get the Carrier Dome packed again, people just won't come out. Like, when I was there, it was a given. It was a given that you'd, like, get 45K and pack that place. And it was, you know, just one of the best atmospheres that was out there. So, yeah, it was a great time.
So could you put it down to one favorite moment? You can give a two or three if you have it as an undergrad. It doesn't have to be lacrosse only.
My absolute favorite moment was the 1998 Syracuse Virginia Tech football game. Syracuse fans will remember that, or a lot of other people might know it as the game where Donovan McNabb threw the cross field touchdown pass in the final seconds to beat Virginia Tech. It was an amazing game, and it was I forget exactly why, or maybe it was just random, but my mom and my cousin had come up that weekend. I think he was considering coming to Syracuse, so my mom brought him up to take a look at the campus, and we ended up sneaking them into the student section. And we're watching this game. I'm like watching this football game, going nuts. My mom is right next to me, and it's getting down to the wire, and it's like the last play of the game, and Syracuse has to score a touchdown to win. And I turned to my mom, and I said, if we score here, we're storming the field. And she goes, okay. And then, like, after a few seconds, she turns to me, and she goes, what does that mean? So we're going onto the field. And so McNabb hits Stephen Brominski in the end zone. Syracuse wins. Everybody goes nuts. And the whole student section just starts going forward to the field. And I end up storming the field with my mom.
Mama Keeley right in it. Oh, that's awesome.
And Donovan McNabb comes running by us. And, again, it's not me. My mom high-fives him, and he runs past into the tunnel. So I am constantly witness to great moments with Syracuse athletes and coaches, but I'm never the one who interacts.
That's why you're such a great writer, I think. You know, right. You capture these moments because you're not really in it. No, that's great. That's an awesome story, I'm sure. I love your Twitter thread that you had about most benign moment with an athlete. Can I put that on you? What was yours as an undergrad with, you know, any athlete? That you know, it doesn't have to be Donnie.
Best like inconsequential moment.
Yeah, that was a great Twitter. That got a lot of numbers. Yeah, that was
a fun. Mine was basically like I got on the bus to. I don't know Syracuse. There's a place called South Campus where, like, if you're a sophomore or a junior, you might, after you move out of the front dorm, you end up at South Campus, which is basically like army barracks that have been converted into dorms, although apparently they're tearing them down now. But that's where I lived. And so you take a bus from the main campus to South Campus. And one time I was standing on there and Donovan McNabb gets on. Oh. And it's just one of those moments where, like, you can't do anything but just, like, smile. It was just like one of those things where I looked at him, he looked at me, I smiled, and then like he smiled because I was smiling, and then like that was it. And then like he sat down and we just kept going. But I always love my friend's inconsequential Syracuse athlete story, which was he was in a class with Jason Hart on the basketball team, and they were doing some project, and they were trying to figure out a time to meet. And they figured out, like, all right, we're going to meet, like, Tuesday night or whatever it was. And they broke. And then, like, an hour later, he gets an email from Jason Hart being like, actually, I can't do Tuesday night. We have a game. And we just started. Like, that's, like, such a big deal for us that there's a Syracuse basketball game on Tuesday. How did you not know that?
Oh, my bad. Yeah, I got a game that day. So did you get into writing as an undergrad, or was this, like, even back in high school you were into it, or how did you
When I was a young kid, I somehow figured out that I wanted to be a screenwriter. That was my thing. I was like a storyteller, and I felt like, well, I don't really feel like I want to write books, but I kind of want to tell stories, and I love movies, so why don't I be a screenwriter? And that was kind of my thing. So when I applied to Syracuse, I had actually applied to get into the Newhouse School of Communication because they have a television, radio, and film major where you can do screenwriting. But I didn't end up getting in. I didn't have a good GPA for that. So I ended up being a management student. So I was like a marketing and entrepreneurship major. And so I kind of had that screenwriting thing on the back burner and got out of college. I graduated in 2000, and so I caught the original .com bubble, like, right on the way down. It's, you know, like pets.com and like all those crappy internet companies that popped up back in the day and then like went out of business. Like, I was right on the end of that. So I ended up working for two .com companies that both like went out of business within a year. And so I was kind of like bummed out and didn't really know what I was doing with myself. And I was living in Hoboken at the time and working in New York City. And one day I was just kind of like, well, why don't I just start doing this screenwriting thing again? And I basically just like read some books and started writing and had some ideas for some stories and did that. And then basically was in a position where I had some family out in LA that let me stay with them. And so I went out there for a month just to kind of see if, well, maybe do I want to move out to LA and really give this a shot? And, ended up, I did leave out that, when I working at my first company, I started a movie review website, and that was kind of my first foray into, like actually trying to do some writing where I just do like movie. So I do a lot of movie reviews, and we did like contests to guess what the opening weekend was of a movie and stuff, like long before people were doing, you know, all that box office mojo stuff. This is like Wild West internet stuff.
Filmdrunk.com. Yeah. Remember
those
sites?
Oh yeah. This is like, you know, back when like when the Ain't It Cool News website.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff was popping, and so that was where I first started getting back into it, and then when I wanted to do screenwriting, actually this is a good story. So because of that website, I started getting on studio web press release lists and screening lists, so that I would get invited to movie screening so I could review the movies. And somehow I ended up on the list for the High Times Stony Awards.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And Snoop Dogg was, yeah, it's a big deal.
So yeah, Snoop, this is amazing. Go ahead. No, please.
Snoop Dogg is there to promote The Wash. I don't know if you remember that movie.
Yeah. Of course.
So he was there to like that was up for a bunch of that was like the Citizen Kane of the Stony Awards. So he was there, and I got invited to cover the event, and I ended up meeting some people from Lionsgate Entertainment because it was their movie. And, you know, I didn't really think anything of it. It was like, it was kind of cool to be around that and all that. So fast forward, you know, a couple months, I go out to LA for a month to kind of see whether or not I want to actually move out there and try to be a screenwriter, but I got to find a job first. And I end up seeing that Lionsgate is looking for a PR intern. So I threw a resume up on their website and, you know, that I didn't really think about it. And I get a call a couple days later, and I got invited in to you know, interview for the position. And I go in, and it's the person that I met in New York at this event. And she's and we sit down, and she's like, okay, so you're an idiot. You know that, right? That was the first thing she says to me. And I'm like, what? She says, like, she's like, I didn't want to have to go through this whole process of, like, trying to find somebody. Like, I already knew you from that event. You should have just, like, I gave you my card. Why didn't you just email me and tell me you were interested when you saw the job posting? I would have just hired you, but we already started the process, so now we have to go through the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
So that was my first lesson.
Oh, my God.
In actually trying to, like, the power of networking and actually putting yourself out there.
No, obviously, no, you're writing it. I was going to get into the book. I did not know the screenwriting background. That's pretty awesome, Sean.
Yeah.
Tell me there's a 17-year-old Sean draft of a hardscrabble group of lacrosse kids, you know, kind of Mighty Ducks thing. I mean, if you need help writing that or sprucing that up, just give me a call. So I'd be loving it. So how did you invent or found Troy Nuez? Is this around that time?
It's funny. In my mind, it happens a lot earlier than it actually did. But I think – so I worked at Lionsgate for a couple of years, and then I ended up working at this smaller film company called Tartan Films. And I was, you know, still doing the screenwriting thing, but, you know, I would procrastinate a lot or I just wouldn't be able to get around to it. So I was looking for something to do where it's like, well, I just want to write every day. And it doesn't have to be screenwriting. It can be whatever. And so this is right about the time where, and I always say that this sounds super cheesy now, and every year it gets worse. But at the time, Bill Simmons is like a revelation as the sports guy for ESPN2, and I'm reading Deadspin with Will Leach, and like it's blowing my mind because it sounds so silly now. But, you know, this is 2004, 2005, and the idea that you could get, like, the sports news of the day with this really snarky commentary and making jokes and making fun of stuff, and it wasn't just, you know, because up until then, it just felt like if you wanted to get sports news, you either get it from the newspaper the next day or you get it from SportsCenter. Like, that was it. Those were the two ways that you digest sports.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden these blogs come along, and it was like mind blowing to me because it's like, wait, you can actually do this now? Like, that was amazing.
Mm.
So I was like, yeah, I want to start a blog, and I kind of stopped and started a couple. I think originally I was going to do a screenwriting blog, but I did that for like a week and then stopped. And then I was going to do this other blog, and I did that for a week and I stopped. And so I was like, all right, I got to find a topic that I actually, like, when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to find out what's going on and write about it. And it initially was a hybrid of college football, which I loved in general, and Syracuse, which I had actually kind of been estranged from Syracuse football and basketball when I moved out to LA. I wasn't really following it that closely. Obviously, the 2003 national championship, that was a big deal, but I would not say that I was like a super passionate fan at the time, and so I kind of saw writing the blog as a way for me to get back into it too. And so, I decided to start this blog, and I'm like, all right, got to figure out a name. And this is also the Wild West era of sports blogs, when it were just like tons and tons of indie blogs, where it was just, you know, somebody with a WordPress site or somebody with a blog post site, you know, was out there. And there were so many Syracuse blogs already. There were tons of them. And it's like, well, like all the names you would expect are taken, like Orange 44 is taken, Cuse Country is taken, Orange Central, like all that stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, I can try to like figure out a way to do something like that, or I can just go off the go off the rails here and just have some fun with it. And so there was always this memory that I had in the back of my mind of a Syracuse football game from, I think it was 2002, where it's Syracuse versus Auburn, Syracuse has no business being in, like, in this game. They're supposed to lose, but somehow they're in it, and it's getting down to the wire. And at the time, we have a quarterback named Troy Nunes, and Troy is, you know, he has the unfortunate job of following in the footsteps of Donovan McNabb, and you know, we Syracuse fans had kind of gotten spoiled with that, and he just, you know, he just was not that, and so he was not the kind of player who you expected, you know, amazing things from, but he was playing fairly well in this game. And and towards the end of it, he throws this touchdown pass to David Tyree, of all people, who of course makes an amazing catch. And the announcer says, without any hint of irony, Nunes is an absolute magician. And, and like, it was just like the craziest thing I'd ever heard, because like, no, he's not. And like, he threw a touch. Like, it was just like the absurdity of the moment of like, Troy Nunes, really? Like, no, nothing against the guy, but I don't know if he's an absolute magician. But, and it's just like something that stuck with me. And then so I'm thinking about naming the blog, and I'm like, well, why don't I just name it that? And, you know, it. I don't think I really thought much beyond it. I think that was just my personality, to make it something weird and stupid that doesn't make any sense because I can. And so that's what I did. And, you know, the cool thing about it was it became this thing where it's like, well, if you know who Troy Nunes is and you know why that's a weird thing to say, you're in the club. Like, you get this, what's going on here. And so it was kind of like that's that, I think that helped define what the blog was kind of about, really. Like, it was going to be this absurd and silly take on Syracuse sports.
Well, I mean, we were talking about it other show with Ryan and Chris. Like, I think that's why people, I mean, you're quite humble. This was the biggest Syracuse blog. I think there was like close to 1 million hits a month when you were like really humming. This is yeah. Because of your voice. It's like people come for like unique stuff. You know, you could be try to format yourself to like, you know, what you think the market wants, or you could just be yourself, and then if they people like it, they like it, and obviously they liked your stuff. So how was it that when you started getting, you know, attention, like, did you was this like Facebook, like the social network type of thing, like, you know what I mean, like was that kind of exciting, yeah. You know, building something kind of feel?
I mean, I can remember the days when I would just get excited because I got like 100 views, like 100 hits. And I'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. That 100, you know, potentially 100 people came to the site today. And then, you know, it just started to grow, and I would start to see the same people in the comments section. And then I would start to see, you know, this is back for social media. So the way that you grew a site back then was basically just like link sharing. Like, you, instead of Twitter and Facebook, the thing that grew that site, helped grow that site more than anything, was Deadspin used to have a daily link dump, and you would just send good links over to them. And if they ended up linking to your website, your traffic would go through the roof that day. Absolutely. And then the next thing, it would come back down, but you'd have like a little bit more than you did the day before. And you would just kind of like build up those steps of, you know, of the awareness that you would get as it went. And it was such a different, weird time, because you kind of had that. This was still back when newspaper people and journalists like really distrusted and disliked blogs. So I remember we would catch a lot of crap from the local Syracuse journalists. Like, there would be some snide remarks in some of their columns and stuff like that.
About you? About the blog?
Sometimes, like, maybe, I don't know if it was never, it wasn't really about me specifically. It was about like bloggers, because I remember one time Orange 44 said something like, who was it? There was a coach like Jim Tressel, or somebody was seen on campus. And it was all this is about the time like Greg Robinson is just like destroying the Syracuse football program. So people are desperate for him to be fired. And I forget, there was some coach who was spotted on campus, and Orange 44 wrote about it. And I don't even think they really were like does this mean he's going to be hired or anything? I think they were just like, hey, this guy was seen on campus. You know who this is. Like, that's interesting. And there was this post-standard Syracuse.com writer who like laid into why that was such a terrible thing to do, and there was no integrity, and you know, all this stuff, and so there was like this budding war that was always constantly simmering between Syracuse bloggers and certain journalists, and it wasn't for a while that, I mean, there were also you know, Syracuse.com people who were very cool. Like Brent Axe was always very cool about that, and Mike, like the basketball beat writers, Mike Waters and Donna DeToto, were very cool. And then, you know, eventually those other people kind of went away or realized like we're not the bad guys. Like bloggers are you know, and now it's silly to even still have that conversation now. Like we all get it now.
they must have saw that Buzz Bissinger ran on Deadspin with Will Leach. You remember that one where he talks about blogs? I think it was like the mid aughts or late aughts. So yeah. It was right around the height. So what inspired you to write your great book, How to Grow an Orange?
So I was doing Noons for a while, and you know, it was doing really well, but I wasn't really making any money off of it. And then, so it started out as a Blogspot blog, and then SB Nation came along. And I noticed they didn't have a Syracuse blog, so I reached out to them, and they knew about it already. So they were like, "Yeah, we'd love to have you as part of the network." So I joined SB Nation, and that I started making a couple hundred bucks a month, which was, you know, was fine for that. But I was still like, you know, I really wanted writing to be my career at that point, and so I realized, you know, there's only so much you're ever really going to be able to do financially on the blog itself. You know, you can get tons of traffic and maybe increase your ad revenue a little bit, but it's never going to be enough unless you're, you know, unless you're like one of the select few. Like, it's just not going to happen. But I was like, all right, how can I make some money on this? And I was like, all right, well, I have this big audience who seems to like what I'm doing and is interested in what I'm writing. So what if I could write something for them that they would be willing to pay for that would actually be worthwhile? And I was like, all right, well, why don't I try writing a book? And, you know, I think pretty quickly I came to the realization, like, there is no how-to guide to be a Syracuse fan. So why don't I write that? And that was basically it. I just started writing it on my own. The book ended up being kind of a A to Z, everything you need to know about Syracuse. And then I also inserted a bunch of essays that I had written on the blog and kind of went back and reworked them about my experiences at Syracuse. And I think I shopped it around a little bit, didn't really get any bites. So I was like, all right, well, I'll just self-publish then. And then that's what I did. So I self-published it, and you know, I was unfortunately a little bit too early in terms of the self-publishing industry, like really getting its together. I didn't.
That. Sorry, no, I'm joking. I got to timestamp that for Ryan to bleep out. So no, sorry to interrupt you. Please.
No, it's all right. I was testing the waters to see what I could get.
No, no, it's pretty much PG-13. You know, think of that. You know.
So
Ryan's the one who's big about it, and I like to make him do more work when I can. But he always is like, "We gotta work. Watch the language." Like, I mean, like, it's not like I go cursing a lot, but I always love whenever the first one drops in these interviews. So.
Good. I'm glad.
No, this is great. 45 minutes, you're just, you know, perfect.
So it was kind of right before Amazon really perfected the self-publishing thing. So the deal I had didn't really make me that much money, but it was still really cool to sell a ton of books. And I ended up, you know, the SU bookstore started selling them, and I went there to do a signing, which was pretty awesome.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was like that was the most surreal day, I think, of my life, because it was the first time I was walking to the bookstore and somebody stopped me on the street to take a picture with me. And that was like super weird. And like, I was like, how do you even recognize me? And how did you like know it was me? And why do you want a picture with me? That's weird. But also cool. And then I went, and there were tons of people showed up for the signing, and my mom was there, and you know, so it was this really cool thing where I It's like, I did it. I feel like I'm a writer now. And yeah, and so that felt like a really good accomplishment.
Oh, that's awesome. So have you ever bouncing ideas for part two, or not even in Syracuse, but just like another dip in booking, or like you're really busy now with multiple like online sites and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I did think about going back and kind of doing a 2.0 version. I dabbled with that idea, and I even thought about reaching out to the Syracuse University Press to see if they would want to do like a revised version. But I just don't know if I have ever really had the time to or the energy to put into that. Because yeah, I still like doing screenwriting. I've also got into playwriting. And audio drama podcasts, I've gotten into that now. And so I've always got like 17 things going on between work and my own writing, and writing another book is probably a little bit far down the list, but I certainly wouldn't turn it down if somebody offered.
So I got to ask, were you right the originator of College Cross, or – I kind of get like, you know, the Hoya came on one time and Ryan's been there a long time, but I never really know exactly, but I always get a feeling that you were somewhere involved. Like we left you up there as a editor emeritus for a long time. I was like, because I just always thought you were really funny and you're from Jersey. So I always gave a lot of slack, but so yeah, can you give us a little bit of the site's history?
Yeah. I mean, basically it goes back to SB Nation was growing, and I obviously was a big lacrosse person, and I said to somebody at some point, like, hey, we should start a lacrosse blog. You know, I'd be happy to help kind of push that and get that going. And I didn't really think I had the time to be the editor for it, but I figured, you know, maybe somebody else would. And Matt, you know, otherwise known as Hoya Suxa, he had shown some interest in it. So I was like, hey, I was like, hey, SB Nation, we got a guy who wants to work on it. And so we basically ushered it into existence. But I would say for the most, I did some light writing for it. I think when we started, I know we had a different editor who was, I completely forget. There was somebody else who edited it for a while and then eventually kind of came over to you guys. But I was basically like absentee editor of that site for 6 years, 7 years. But I don't think I actually really did anything for most of that.
No, right on. So, I mean, I could literally talk to you about Troy New West for another hour. But you also have gone on to other sites. I like your work with neighborhoods.com. And you've been doing this podcast review besides the writing for podcasts. Like, have you found the medium for podcasting starting to become you know, it's like almost, I don't know if it's the biggest, like, you know, with radio and streaming out there, but, you know, just podcasts in general seem to be growing exorbitantly in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a lot of how when blogs really kind of started and took off, and that it democratized this whole idea of you can make a podcast about literally anything, any genre, whatever you want. And, you know, I'm a fan of a whole bunch of different types of them, but I also became a fan of audio dramas, you know, which are basically radio plays. It's not like they're anything. It's just the new delivery system. And, you know, it was a way for me, you know, I've been doing screenwriting and playwriting, and the problem with those kind of things is it's kind of hard to get things actually made, but you can write an audio drama podcast and then just make it. And so that's what we did. My wife and I, we made Passage 2 years ago, I think, which I wrote the story and she starred in it. And I'm working on another one right now that hopefully we're going to make pretty soon, which is also kind of like a mystery idea that I had. And so, yeah, like it's really fun to do that. And I think podcasts are, you know, I don't think they're going to be replacing movies and TVs anytime soon. But I think it's cool to have this other avenue of entertainment that, you know, again, you can literally do anything with.
That's what I think. I mean, you're right. Like movies, TV, sitting on the couch, Netflix, they'll always have a large place in people's lives. But the versatility with podcasts, like I walk to work, I just put it on, like, you know, anytime, like I know people who drive to work, like listen to podcasts. Like, it's the, you know, we live alone a lot or in front of computers a lot is just feeling like you're listening in on a conversation with a couple friends, or you know, especially if you follow that pod, like you know, it's cool to watch and see how it grows. I remember back in the day, as you would said, like Bill Simmons and Ricky Gervais, those were the only two podcasts I knew, and I loved them both. You know, I devour them.
Yeah.
It was just so hard, you know, the starting it up. It now is democratized, and anyone can get in there. I mean, we're close on pushing an hour, so I would love to keep talking, but I got to ask you a little bit about lacrosse season. Have you followed as much about Syracuse? I know they are not as much of a national program as when you were an undergrad. I'm just kidding. You know, that you got to feed the Fire Desco crowd a little bit who's listening. But it's compare, you know, the program back in, I guess those were the salad days, right? Mid-90s, Syracuse lacrosse, that was it. You guys were, like, running it, like, and – how do you feel about the program now? Are you not as on the ledge as some fans are? Or, I just kind of think, like, in the regular season, you guys have been dominant, like, at least four out of the last 5 years. So, you know, I think Desco's doing a good job. But I'd love to hear your take on the season in general and, you know, the playoff run, as short as it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I think especially for older Syracuse fans. It's so crazy to think about how many years in a row they went to a Final Four and you know, and won all those titles. And, when I was there, we had Casey Powell, and I think maybe by the time I graduated, I think there may have been another Powell involved somewhere, Ryan maybe. But you know, and so yeah, they were a behemoth when I was there, and it's just a given. It was like it wasn't really like rooting for Syracuse lacrosse wasn't. So it was almost like it was you didn't really worry about it. Like Hopkins or somebody like that was a big deal. But you really didn't like work like when they make the tournament, whatever they were, you just knew like, well, they're going to go to the Final Four, obviously, and we'll figure it out from there. So it just is such an adjustment and a tough one for a lot of older fans that because the game changed and, you know, kind of grew up, which is a good thing for lacrosse in general. It's a bad thing for Syracuse because it just means that they're not the, you know, this dominant force anymore. So I think I'm used to that idea. It's not like we fell off. Like we still make the tournament most of the time.
Yeah, you're like 12-3 automatic, except for this season.
Like, I know, like
4 years running. Like,
I know, like of all the, it's that, you know, it's like that with Nebraska football when they fired Tom or when Tom Osborne left and Frank Solich came on and went like 9-3 for a couple of years and they fired him.
It was like unacceptable. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's unacceptable. You know, we're Nebraska. We should be winning national championships every year. And it's like it's just not. That's not what this is anymore. And 9-3 is pretty good. And so, you know, I'm sure if you just look at it on like on paper, you're like, yeah, Desco sucks because, you know, we're not winning championships every other year compared to the other guys. But it's just it's such a different animal. And in a way, there's like a weird satisfaction that I maybe I'm not supposed to admit to in just seeing Syracuse kind of have some struggle. And, you know, that it's a little bit – that it's tougher now that, you know, they have to fight more and work harder to actually make it to the Final Four and or win a title. And maybe that makes it mean more when they do.
Oh, no, I hear you. Like, you know me, I'm fanatically East Coast. But when my buddy moved to Cali, he said – I was like, oh, it's great. You got to move out here. I was like, you don't appreciate the time. It's always 75. You know what I mean? Like, you get the winter time to appreciate spring and summer. So I hear what you're saying. That's life, you know, like overcoming adversity and stuff. So I got to ask you, do you have a favorite Syracuse lacrosse moment? I don't want to, you know, put you on the spot there if you weren't that much of a, you know going to go that back into the memory bin.
I mean, I kind of spoiled it already.
Was that I was going to ask you if you went to any of these Final Fours because that was kind of like seemed like an annual thing. It was still kind of college campuses, so I didn't know if you went to one at Rutgers, you know.
You know, I don't think I ever made it to a Final Four. We saw them play at Princeton one time. And I wish that, you know, I wish we would have, in general, I wish I would have gone to more away games for a lot of sports when I was there, but we didn't. But, yeah, I mean, my still, like, seeing that Syracuse Virginia game in 96, that I haven't seen a better game since. And, you know, some people, I've seen some people say it's one of the best games ever. And I believe it, because it was just ridiculous. And you know, so I've seen some good games since then, but that felt like a really magical thing, that, like, here's my introduction to Syracuse lacrosse is this.
Would 2010 Cody Jamison goal, right? It was a 2009 season, the last second against Cornell, be top three?
Oh, man, yeah. I think I'm trying to remember where I was when I remember watching that. There was that, and maybe this is kind of messed up, but I remember there was that one year where we played Navy, and, like, everybody was – like, we were the bad guys. Like, everybody was rooting for Navy because these guys – you know, these kids are going to – you know, they are in the Navy. So, like, once this game is over, they are going to the Navy. And then we ended up beating them, and I was like, that is so – that's so Syracuse lacrosse. Like, that was – that was so, like, what we were. We were just, like, that evil – and we were the evil empire of college lacrosse in the 2000s and late 90s. And I wouldn't say it's, like, my favorite memory, but I just remember thinking, like, that is such a thing that we would do.
That was, yeah, it was 06. I remember because you guys knocked us out in the quarterfinals. That was a good team. I remember that. Yeah. That. Yeah, you're exactly right. Literally, like, I think, like, every non-Syracuse fan was rooting for Navy that run. Yeah. So we'd like to do a little rapid fire here. So I think you'll enjoy these. These are you're a big fan of food, so we're a food blog posing as a lacrosse blog. So we got a couple good ones for you. So first one, kind of a layup. Where was your favorite place to eat in Syracuse when you were an undergrad?
My favorite place to eat was Kimmel Food Court. We'd go there at night, and they had the Taco Bell KFC thing going on, and whatever, you know, they would either have, like, the tacos ready to go or the chicken sandwich ready to go, and whatever it was, you'd just pick it and then go sit down and eat.
That sounds like good service, quick and fast. So I know you've been moving around the country a lot, so let's start with Seattle. What was your favorite spot to eat? What's the best place to eat in Seattle?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think if you're going to go to Seattle, you probably have to go to Paseo, which is a Cuban sandwich shop where they have, like, lines around the corner. That place is – that's, like, one of those you just got to go there. Probably my favorite meal I had while I was in Seattle was at a place called The Walrus and the Carpenter, and it's a seafood restaurant. And the chef has gotten really famous. She has a bunch of restaurants, I think, around Seattle now. But just, like, the freshest, tastiest food I think I'd ever eaten, especially seafood. It was amazing. And I highly recommend going there.
Favorite place? I didn't know you're kind of still new to the area, but favorite place to eat in Chicago?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I feel, cause, like, with Chicago just has so many places to eat that it doesn't matter how many you go to, you're just, like, it's like a drop in the bucket.
Barely scratching the surface. Yeah.
Yeah, like, whatever place I say, somebody's going to be like, there's 50 better places than that. And I will say, I agree with you. I just haven't been there yet.
It's kind of also like, fighting the tide, because, like, each one that you try, the three more has just opened up, you know, because, like, someone else, like, went out of business, you know, so there's a lot of turnover, I'm sure. I would put you on the spot, but I just want this on the record. I hope you answer in the right way. You know, there's a lot of people in Jersey gonna be listening to this carefully. New York, Jersey, you can throw Philly pizza or Chicago pizza.
Oh my god, like, by a mile, New York, Jersey, Philly, East Coast pizza.
Okay, good answer. Great answer, actually, Sean. That's a great answer. Please continue.
And here's my rant about deep dish pizza.
Oh, go. Preach. There's no shot clock. Go ahead.
I finally had it a couple months ago, and it's fine. Like, it's good. It's pizza. Like, it's fine. But, like, it's not – it's, like, not even a contest. It's just – like, whatever. It's and the funny thing is, from what I found out, most people in Chicago don't actually like deep dish pizza either. It's like this sneaky thing where they prop it up to be like, this is our thing. We love it. It's amazing. But somebody figured out that most people in Chicago eat East Coast style pizza all the time.
It's just convenient. Like, let's be serious. Like, you can eat it with one hand. You can fold it. You can dip whatever. It's just.
Yeah.
It's not even a question. All right, good. I was just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if, you know, if we lost you.
Chicago is very proud of its stuff. And I will say that all of its stuff is good. It's just not what they want it to be sometimes.
Exactly. I think we're on the same side on this one. I think it's Bon Jovi versus Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, I'm Jovi.
Right on.
I was of the era of Bon Jovi. Had those cassettes of those albums. That was my thing.
He was crushing it in the 90s. Are you happy about the renovations at the Dome?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'm unhappy about is it's about 10 years too late, and even when they're done, they're still going to be behind most of the other programs out there in terms of football facilities. I'm reading about the Northwestern practice facility that just went up, and it's like this absurd glass building right on the lake, and it's, you know, it's also $270 million, which is crazy. That's a whole other thing, but
that's Rutgers in Maryland, Big Ten money.
Right, all that Times Square money that's pouring in for Rutgers.
It's true. I mean, the money is real. Like, this is the best part about the Big Ten, and I love that you're in Chicago. I hope you fly East Coast flag high. It's like there's so much contempt for Rutgers in Maryland, and I guess a little bit the Hopkins, but. And I'm just like, but you still take the money. You know, it's one or the other. Like, and then they like arrogantly, oh, I'd love to get rid of Rutgers. I was like, I guarantee your athletic administration would veto that immediately. Because if like,
that's right.
So, but
right. No, it's true.
Now, did I see this right? Is there going to be like a Cowboys like glass roof or like a way for God to look at the field? Or is that someone's meme or like another?
No, yeah, the roof will now have, like, the center of the roof will be see-through.
So God can watch Syracuse lacrosse, you know? It was good.
He can watch it, and he can judge John Fisco. Imprint the Fire Desco hashtag on the field if he so chooses.
We can finally show him what we've been wanting. Now, if you were Mike Bloomberg money, what renovation would you want at the Dome?
I would love to see. I've always felt like Syracuse fans need a little bit of a kick in the pants to like do interesting things at football games and basketball games. We're not the most creative bunch when it comes to like cheers and exciting things. So I'd love to see, like, I don't know, do something crazy with the student section, like where it's like standing room only, or you know, like really put them like right on top of the field. And I would just like create all these different opportunities other than sitting on cinder blocks around the stadium to, like, I don't know, like just create cool atmosphere in there. Like, I would have, you know, the lounge area that overlooks the field, and I would have the like upper deck with, I don't know, where it's like closer, like right on top of the field, and just make it like the coolest environment ever, and, you know, make it where you actually want to like go there. And, you know, maybe you don't want to sit, you know, in your seat for 3 hours, but it'd be cool to hang out at a bar right over the 30-yard line and, you know, be able to be out there and cheer too.
Oh, that's great. Now we know, I mean, we just discovered, thanks for dropping, that's podcast magic with all your stories about playwriting and stuff. So we know you're a big Marvel fan. How about you give us your top five Marvel movies?
Top five Marvel movies. I have to admit that there are a few recent ones I have not seen.
Oh.
So this is not a judgment on Black Panther or Thor Ragnarok. I just have not seen them. But my favorites, I really like Captain America Civil War. We'll go with that. I did not like the Iron Man sequels. Guardians of the Galaxy 1, I like that one. I just saw Infinity War finally, like a month later, because I'm an old person. that was good. I'm currently perusing all of the older films to figure out what I'm forgetting. I did not enjoy Doctor Strange.
Benedict really, I mean, I'm not on that train. Everyone keeps trying to push it, but...
He has such, like, his American accent is so jarring to me.
It's bad.
It's so, like, not real.
I mean, did you watch the what's the Enigma Machine movie? I forget the name. I did watch it, but the one with Kira, obviously I watched Kira was in it. So, he had a scene where he was running, and I was just like, literally no human being has ever ran like that. And I was like, and I've seen Chariots of Fire, so don't put it on the error. Those guys knew that good form in that movie. You know what I mean? Like, and he was doing something with his arms. I mean, they were going like side to side. It was crazy. But sorry to interrupt. So did you? What's your pick?
What? Actually, my number one pick is Winter Soldier. That I forgot about that one.
The ones with Bucky are good. Like those Cap movies are good.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are fans of the first Captain America movie. I don't like origin movies. I usually find them like annoying, like because they basically are a movie that exists to set up other movies. So I find that like very, it feels obnoxious to me that I have to pay $12 for this. and Spider-Man was fun. I like that.
It's like, give us your money so we can show you where you're going to be spending your money later on.
Yeah, I just find that so obnoxious. Just make a good movie. Just do that.
Was that kind of, I mean, you can spoil Infinity Stones. I don't care. I mean, I like spoilers sometimes. When we're watching Netflix, I go right to the Wikipedia page. I heard that was kind of like the big thing, kind of disappointment. Everyone, you're like, so no, like none of these guys are really going to die.
Yeah, I had heard, I heard all these people raving about it, and then I finally, literally saw it last night, and I just found, the whole ending, you're showing me all these people who are quote-unquote dying, but I know they're not going to die, because I know you're making more movies with these characters, so you've totally undercut the whole thing. Like, it should have just been characters that we actually think, will may or may not, go past this, but it was, I thought they kind of undercut themselves, and you can just tell whatever the next one, they're going to undo a lot of the stuff that happens in this one, and that feels weird.
All right, this one's for me, my personal question, where do you put in Dark Knight in that top five? I wanted you to set it up, give you a chance to give the Marvel case, and now, come on, Dark Knight's got to be At least top three.
Dark Knight is, and I will fight anyone on this, it is the perfect action movie screenplay. It like thematically, story wise, it is so perfect in that. I mean, there's obviously nitpicks and stuff like that, but it's so well written and so well done that I have never seen another superhero movie to match it.
It was I think the death of Heath built it up, but it definitely lived up to the. I mean, the first one with the Batman Begins was great, and then this surpassed it by. And that's not even fair. That makes Batman Begins look worse, even though that was a great first movie.
And that was the rare origin movie that I was okay with because it's another one of those things where now we're like, oh, an edgy Batman movie, whatever. But back then, coming off the Batman and Robin and all that stuff, Batman Begins felt really revolutionary. And so that was cool. And then Dark Knight just puts it all together. And we don't have to talk about Dark Knight Rises because it never happened. So
even though it had Marion Cotillard, she does get a she gets a Dion Waiters heat check award. She was great. what does DC got to do to fix it? Because I won't lie to you, like, Marvel movies are good, especially the Captain America ones. I kind of really like those. But the DC ones, I guess I'm just really looking at Batman. They're grittier. I kind of like them. They're a little grimy, but they're a little bit lost. What's DC got to do to get back on track here?
If I were running things, I would kind of go the direction that it sounded like they were going, which was they were just going to make that standalone Batman movie in Arkham Asylum.
Mm.
Because what they need to do at this point is they really need to take a step back and like step away from trying to emulate Marvel and instead figure out like how can we make just one amazing movie? Like one just... You know, how can we make another Dark Knight or something like that? And I think what would be really cool about an Arkham Asylum movie is it would be the first time where you could actually see a Batman movie where it's all the villains. Like we see all of them. And, and that's, you know, because every movie is always you have one villain, you know, maybe two villains. It would be really cool to see that. And I feel like if you could do that one movie really well, you could just kind of reboot things softly out from that. But like, just make a self-contained story. Don't worry about world building. Don't worry about Easter eggs. Just tell like one awesome story that we're dying to see, and then like go from there.
I think the one-off idea is great. I mean, think of Rogue One. That movie, in my opinion, might be the best of the more recent Star Wars, which is great, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it wasn't like I didn't need to know, like, okay, these guys, you know, literally everyone dies. So, like, none of these guys are going to come back, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, favorite top three movies? I would love to hear this because you seem to obviously have a great knowledge of movies and stuff.
Oh, like top three all time?
Yeah, I mean, you can make it five if you want to cheat, but, you know, I made it one and I thought it was too stringent, so I thought three is good. Now keeps, you know, a little tougher.
Yeah. All right, well, my favorite movie of all time is Waiting for Guffman.
Really?
Yeah, Christopher Guest movie. The ironic thing being I'm a screenwriter, and that movie is no script whatsoever. But I think it's just one of the funniest movies ever. It's amazing. So that was probably number one. Number two, I love Real Genius, the Val Kilmer movie from the 80s.
Oh, wow. These are deep cuts. This is what the people come for.
So Real Genius, like back in the Stone Age, before we had like all these cable channels, in New Jersey, we had a TV station called WPIX. And I think it was in New York too. And it was like the pre-CW station where they would just play like movies and syndicated reruns all day. And so they had this lineup. It was like you always knew they were going to do one of like 30 movies every Saturday. So it was like Real Genius, Breakfast Club, The Beastmaster, The Last Starfighter. And they would just like continuously loop all these movies. So I would watch Real Genius all the time. And it is highly underrated as I think as a comedy movie. And like Val Kilmer, like, you know, he ends up being an action hero before he takes that weird turn late in his career. But he was I thought he was really funny in that, and it was a cool story. So that's two. And then probably number three, I'd say Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a very funny one.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was funny. I love zombie movies. And I love Edgar Wright movies. I love Hot Fuzz World's End is the other one. So yeah, I'll go with those as my top three.
The kids today don't really realize like Val Kilmer like had the world in the palm of his hand for a minute there.
Yeah. He was like the biggest star for like a 6 month period.
Literally, he was the biggest dude ever for like a.
Yeah, he was like the Saint and Batman.
God, people don't know how good the Saint is.
Maybe it should stay that way.
Yeah, peak Elizabeth Shue is great. It's just like our little cult secret is great.
Sorry.
Now you know me. I am like passionately Jersey boy. So you may be a little bit too cool, but I have to ask this. Favorite Kevin Smith movie? Are you a Kevin Smith fan also? I want to know that. Just because, you know, he's such a, you know, part of Jersey, especially like late 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, Clerks came out when I was a senior in high school. And I don't think I saw it for like another year, but I loved Clerks. That was like the movie that – I think that was one of the formative movies where I was like, well, hell, I can do this. Like, you know, there's this guy from Jersey just making a movie in the local convenience store.
Yeah.
Like, that feels very doable. So, but yeah, I loved it. I was a fan of Chasing Amy and Mallrats and Dogma. I like those. I think as I've gotten older, I've kind of like grown out of his genre a little bit. But yeah, I was definitely a big Kevin Smith fan. I actually got to meet him when I was in LA. I was working in Lionsgate. I was interning at an awards show, and he was a presenter. And I went over and I was like, hey, Mr. Smith, I just wanted to say I love your films. I grew up in Old Bridge. And he's like, oh, yeah, Old Bridge Ice Skating Rink. I used to go there all the time. And he was high as a kite. And and that was it. He was just like, all right, thanks. Good chatting with you, man. And then he went out and, like, did whatever he did. And that was it.
So I'm obviously an Affleck stan, but it goes back to Kevin Smith because he was in, like, literally every Kevin Smith movie. And I watched all of them when I was a kid, you know, younger. Speaking of Affleck, got to ask you this. Gone Girl versus Girl on the Train. I've seen great tweets from you about Gone Girl, so I would love to hear this one.
I mean, Gone Girl, just because you got that the scene where with Neil Patrick Harris where she
Doesn't
I don't know if I'm allowed to spoil.
She doesn't win. I mean, it's like 5 years later.
So. Yeah, there you go. That's as vague as you can get.
So, all right. So, favorite TV show right now?
Favorite TV show right now? Oh, that's a good one. I'm watching Killing Eve. That's really good on BBC America.
Yeah, I've listened to Hollywood. Not Hollywood. Perplexes been over the Bringer with Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald. They've been all about Killing Eve. Is that really good? Or I mean,
it's really good. It's like this weird mix of because it sounds generic, you know, like government agent hunting down a serial killer. But it also has these weird, like really funny moments and like plays around with the genre. And Sandra Oh is awesome. And the actress who plays the serial killer or not serial killer. I don't know what you would call her. Hit person. She's really good. Yeah, it's a really good show. I highly recommend it.
Oh, right on. And I guess just sticking on TV, besides Killing Eve, anything on Netflix people should be keeping their eye on? I was a big fan of Mindhunter. Would you co-sign on that or no?
I watched a couple episodes of that. I found myself wondering, like, what, like, thinking, like, what are we doing? Like, what's the plot, I guess? And I kind of like zoned out. I wouldn't necessarily say I thought it was bad. I was just kind of like, I think waiting for something to happen that wasn't happening. And maybe that's my fault.
Nah, I hear you.
But yeah, no, I'm trying to think. Like that German show Dark was really cool. If you like twisty sci-fi time travel type stuff.
Is that German Stranger Things, right?
Stranger Things. Exactly. Yeah, and Stranger Things. That's a good one. What else on the Netflix? I thought Altered Carbon was pretty good. There was a couple. I don't know if it necessarily stuck the landing, but it took a couple episodes to kind of find itself. But once it did, I thought that was kind of a cool, like Blade Runner light type story.
So I think with Netflix, right? Like, there's a few that they totally hit out the park. Like, I thought Ozarks was one, and The Crown is great. I gave Altered Carbon a shot, and I don't know, it was okay. Like I saw their new one. Did you watch it? Anon with not Richard Gere. He's the Clive Owen.
Clive Owen, yeah.
It's actually really good, and just like a part of it's a little ridiculous, just because like a lot of it's people just staring into nothing. But like now everyone's implanted with like this computer stuff, so you can like see like everyone's past or whatever. You know what I mean? Like everything's being recorded. But it was like really well done. And I was like, oh, this is one of the first ones where it was like from beginning to end, Netflix hit it. Like some of these Marvel ones that they have on their shows is just like you know.
Yeah, those Marvel like I liked, you know, some of the stuff with Jessica Jones and the Daredevil, but like they settled into this weird pattern where it's like some, like really cool first episode, and then like a whole bunch of episodes that are like whatever, and then a really cool last episode. But you really got to sit through, you got to like slog through those shows sometimes to get to.
That's the thing. Netflix has so much money they can make one episode, 37 minutes, and another.
I know,
one.
That's a weird thing too.
There, it's just like they don't have to worry about advertisers getting slots, but we could fix Netflix on another episode. And shout out to Ryan and Chris. We may have to get Sean back to do a more Syracuse centric episode because still got a lot to talk about. But Sean, dude, this was amazing. You were so gracious with your time. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, any chance I get to talk about myself, I'm happy about it.
I was going to say, I hope now we actually get a review on your site now that you're on the show. Because I always figure if I give you shout-outs, eventually you'll listen because you'll hear for your name. But one with you actually as the guest, I hope we get at least a tweet or something.
Yeah, I'm not above promoting myself at any moment.
Cheers. That's why you're our favorite Syracuse blogger for sure. But Sean, again, thanks again for listening, and hope you guys enjoyed listening as well. So.
Thanks, man.